So we are going to move to our last speaker. And so now our last speaker will be Mr. Brett Stewart from Global Agritrends. Brett's presentation today is sponsored by Penner Farm Services and Horizon Livestock and Poultry Supply. Brett is the president of Global Agritrends. The firm was organized in 2006 and provides global market research, analysis, and forecasting to a variety of clients around the world. He was formerly the lead economist for the U.S. Meat Export Federation. He has conducted numerous research and analysis projects in the global meat trade area, as well as advising government representatives on international protein trades. Mr. Stewart has conducted on-the-ground agriculture industry research for a variety of clients on six continents. Please welcome Mr. Brett Stewart, and I will give you the table.
Thank you, Brad. Can you guys hear me okay? Let me...
I think we can.
You're get good. My screen shared. How's that? Okay, I'm just trying to move things around here on my screen so I can see it. Good afternoon. It's good to be with you all today. It's been a little bit of a wild week for me. I'm glad we're doing this virtually. I actually tested positive for COVID on Monday of this week. And honestly, it was a little underwhelming. My symptoms were about 10% of a regular flu. And I know some people have it much worse, but it was quite minor. But as those symptoms faded here the last few days, I kind of picked up a head cold. So I'm giving this presentation on a full dose of cold medication. So I should have a disclaimer slide in here for that. Take all of my advice with a grain of salt. No, in all sincerity, I think it's a great time to be talking about what's going on in the world and in the markets. And you can see I just flipped the switch and turned the smiley face onto my world with a mask. And I did that because I think we have a pretty good outlook as we flip the calendar into 2021. We're moving beyond some difficulties. And I think as we go through, you're going to see there's some reason for optimism. I think most of you know who I am. I've been up to your meetings before in Saskatchewan. Like I say, I wish I could have been there today, but in the circumstances, it's a good thing that we weren't planning on that. So I've done a lot of work in the global protein markets over the last 15, 20 years, spent a lot of time in China. I joke with people, the last city that I traveled to in China last year was a city called Wuhan, China. I'd never even heard of Wuhan. There was a swine conference there a year and a half ago, and that was the last city I was in China was Wuhan. And so I guess I'm glad that I tested positive now for COVID, that I can truly determined that I was not patient zero that brought the pandemic to the rest of the world last year. So what I'm going to do today, the premise of my presentation is to just go through some questions that I get. And I thought it might be interesting to do it this way and just say, I'm going to go through and explain to you or talk through the questions that I most commonly get. And so here they are. One, is China really rebuilding from ASF? Will China buy more pork in the future, short-term, long-term? What about ASF in Germany? How much will we export Q4 2021? How will the Biden administration affect pork exports? What do I see as key risks, and what about COVID and pork into 2021? So I hope you're all sharp today. I need you sharp. I'm going to fly through this. I think to talk about China, I decided to put this slide right at the beginning. Now, this slide shows Canadian pork exports. Your exports through September were up 21% on a year-to-date basis. Actually, tomorrow we get the October data, and so we'll be able to add 1 point on both of these charts tomorrow. But the chart on the left is total Canadian pork exports. The chart on the right is it's that same data by country. Now, I don't know if you guys liked roller coasters as a kid growing up, but you're living them now. And you can see the roller coaster. The obvious one there is Canadian pork exports to China. Now, if you look at September, let's do some quick math. September 2020, just over 60,000 tons of Canadian pork went to China. 60,000. Now look at the chart on the left. Total exports were about 120. Well, that's pretty easy math. Roughly half of all of Canadian pork exports went to China in September. Now, the problem is, as you're probably well aware of, is in October, China delisted some Canadian plants or forced Canadian plants to delist themselves over this belief that China has that COVID is arriving on frozen imported foods. And so my expectation is in this October data, we're going to see a sharp drop on that Canadian number. October, November, we could see it drop maybe by half of those 60,000 ton levels. And I know the numbers, right? I know that Canada exports 70% of production, and half of that is now dependent on the most unstable trading partner in the world, which we used to think was Russia. I know your industry has went through that roller coaster as well. If you look at the others line, that's the Russia roller coaster. And so it is a time that I think is worthy of some discussion about China, particularly for your industry. So is China rebuilding from ASF? There has been a mountain of propaganda just poured out by the Chinese government talking about the fantastic recovery from ASF. And my answer is yes, but not as fast as they suggest. What do I mean by that? Well, the government came out and said their pig and breeding sow stocks were back to 80% of normal levels in October. I'm not buying that. And here's some of the reason why. Let's talk about China's ASF problem. The problem is the virus is very hardy. It's a difficult virus to kill. It can survive 1,000 days in frozen meat and still be active. It can survive well over a month in pig manure. So think about that, the hardiness of the virus. Also, China's swine sector, 42 million hog farmers. That's what they had estimated in 2018. We have 42 million hog farmers. Now, the vast majority, almost all of them, are small farmers. They share infrastructure, feed mills, they share trucking. 85% of their pork production came from farms of less than 1,000 head. And so because of that, when you think of ASF, the difficulty of this virus, it's a 95% fatal virus, and the structure of their industry, our belief is it led to a loss of more than 50%. In fact, we think the low water mark was somewhere around 65% of their entire swine herd. Now, those hogs weren't all killed. Most of them, well, they were all killed or died, but they weren't buried or burned. Most of them went through processing and were eaten. There's no human health risk from African swine fever. And so this was a forced cull of over half of their industry. Now, keep in mind, China's hogs are half of the world's swine herd. So you can't have this happen and not have an impact. And the impact was it drove hyperinflation through the Chinese hog sector. Chinese consumers have been paying 100% or more for over a year for their pork. That's at retail, 100% plus price increase now for over a year. Hog profits in China averaged $350 a head for 11 months. That's why I say, are they expanding? Oh, absolutely, they're expanding. Any country in the world, I don't know what we would do if we saw those kind of margins in the U.S. We would have hogs running down the streets in Des Moines, Iowa, if we saw $350 a head profit. So they are expanding. The problem is they still have ASF. So here's the Chinese government plan, large-scale farms. Large-scale farms were less than 15% of production before ASF. So if you're a large-scale farm, here's what you do. Number one, secure the farm. Usually you build a fence around it, and in China, it's usually a concrete wall. I don't know what the Chinese obsession is with building walls, but they like to build concrete walls around their hog farms. Ensure strict biosecurity on everyone entering the farm. Secure your feed supply. Early on, ASF was all throughout the Chinese feed supply, reinfecting, infecting herds all over China. You've got to have a feed mill that you trust completely. Measures on the pigs that are entering your farm, truck wash protocols, build, sow units. Breed your market gilts. It doesn't matter. Just get something giving birth in those farms. It doesn't have to be genetic stock. Sell wiener pigs. Make fantastic profits and count money. That's what the plan has been thus far in China for those big scale companies. These are the publicly traded companies. You can see here some of their planned expansion. These are companies, New Hope, Muyuan, Jiangbang, Techbank, these companies. wins. They're going full speed. And here's the deal. They're actually building the high-rise hog barns. Those things are real. Seven-story. I heard of one that was 13-story. Just building. Because the profits are so good on specifically selling wiener pigs. Build sow barns, sell wiener pigs. Now, I did hear recently that one of those high-rise barns had broken with ASF. And I'm sure that would be an absolute disaster. So the risk is there, but the returns are also there. High risk, high return. So here's the China government plan. I think the government looks at this and says, problem, what problem? Hyperinflation has not led to social tension or instability. It's making these big companies very rich. It prevents the government from having to subsidize anyone. I think the government looks and says, look, consumers are fine paying these high prices. No one's protesting in the streets. And those high prices are going to fix this problem longer term. Now, they're suggesting a 2021 recovery. They do allow some imports. Actually, they've allowed massive imports, incredible imports, not as high as they could have. They have restricted imports, but they have allowed very big imports. Their job has been to try and prevent overseas pork inflation. And they've done a pretty good job of that in the US and Canada. EU pork inflation a year ago kind of got away from them. And Brazilian pork inflation is very high right now. And then they work on the next problem, whatever it is, military, COVID, nationalism, move on. I just don't think the government is terrified of this. You don't hear it in their policies. You don't hear them saying, how are we going to get enough pork? No one's saying that in China. Let the prices run, let the inflation run, and this problem will ultimately fix itself. Now, here's why it won't work, or at least it won't work as fast as China thinks and reports that it will. There's a lack of investment into hog finishing space. Notice I said before, build sow units. You can secure a sow barn, but for every one single space of sow, you need 14 finishing spaces, or at least six or seven finishing spaces, depending on your productivity. But that's the riskiest segment. The finishing is still done by small farmers. The peasants are doing most of the finishing, either under contract or under purchasing of those wiener pigs. It's the most capital intensive, and it's the least profitable, and it's the highest risk. This is where ASF continues. But why are they not building finishing? Because the profits, if you make a bunch of money, build another sow barn. You can sell weaned pigs and make 150, 200 bucks a head profit on little wiener pigs. Just crank them out, secure that sow unit. And so they're still depending heavily on the unstructured, massive, small farmer industry to do their finishing. That's the bottleneck here. So these small farms lack biosecurity. I've seen these farms. That was a farm. I took that picture down near the Vietnam border, Guangxi province. That would be a semi-professional finishing farm, but it's not very many hogs in there. So their lack of productivity, their ASF losses ultimately require a much bigger sow herd to produce the same amount of pork or even less pork for consumers. And again, I mentioned there, they're breeding their market gilts. They're not waiting for genetic sows. Now, I don't know if any of you want to try this experiment. Go breed your market gilts and see what happens. See what productivity does. It's a terrible idea. But again, hog profits are $300+ a head. And so the market is saying, we don't care what it is, get it alive, get it out the door. So the big question for China, when does a viable vaccine arrive? And we just don't know. There's no viable vaccines yet. They continue to find ASF. Occasionally they report it, but it is abundantly clear that they have ASF every week of the year now in China. Here's that structure. 85% of their hogs came from farms of less than 1,000 head. So the big guys, the government says, we're going to let those big guys make money and expand. You bet that works. But how long does it take when they were only 12% of the industry, 15%, to offset the other 85%? It takes years. And they also have to figure out their finishing dilemma. So where are they at today? Here's the Chinese hog prices. Stubbornly high, 30+ RMB per kilo. Now, before ASF, 15 RMB was an average price. And so when the Chinese government keeps telling me, oh, we're having this wonderful success, we're going to be back next year, The way you know that China's back is when Chinese hog prices hit 15 RMB. They're at 33 today. They're going the wrong direction. We've seen a 12% jump in prices in the last week in China. And so I don't think their success is real yet. Now, down the road, eventually, they're going to get closer to where they need to be. I don't think they ever get back to where they were before ASF. Here's what I think. There's the Chinese production and supply. I think the low water mark in 2020, they were short 24 million tons of pork. Now, how much is 24 million tons? All of the traded pork in the world, all of the exported pork in the world is about 8 million tons. Or it was. This year, it'll be 10 million because of how much China bought. But even with those imports, you can see there, the gap is massive. They will recover. I think they're going to start increasing pork. I think it's going to take years, and I don't think they ever get back to where they were. But if you look at that import area on the chart, imports are going to be bigger and bigger for years to come. I think they've realized how affordable global pork is compared to Chinese pork. I don't think it's going away. I think imports are going to be a big piece. Now, imports will be very volatile, especially for the U.S. and any other country that has political baggage with China. They will buy lots. They will stop trade. They will ban. We know the game, right? But I think all in all, those imports are going to be much bigger into China. Now, what if I'm wrong? And I wish I could sit here and tell you that I am never wrong. But what if I'm wrong? And I've been wrong before. If I'm wrong, global meat and protein producers are about to feel an abrupt adjustment. In 2 years, China bought an extra $21 billion of protein. Look at 2018, look at 2020. This is all suppliers, beef, pork, and poultry from the whole world. If they recover next year and somehow they miraculously solve ASF and get back to where they were, then there's $21 billion of protein that's going to have to go somewhere else. That would be an absolute disaster. If that were the case, we should all be in total contraction while they expand. I don't think I'm wrong, but that's the ugly story. If they did correct next year, there's a lot of protein that would have to go somewhere else. So what about from the North American standpoint? And I have U.S. here. This is China pork imports from the U.S. It looks like a bad echocardiogram, like a bad heart monitor. It's not like Mexico that just goes up for 10 years straight. It goes up when they need pork. It goes to zero when they don't need pork. And the question is this time different? Just so you know, 80,000 tons is 1 million hogs a month that they were buying from the U.S. They're down about half of that level now. And so you have to ask yourself, this is political, and it will probably remain political. And I think China will buy more pork into the future. I just think it's going to continue to be somewhat unstable. So in 2020, China bought, by the end of the year, it'll be about 7.5% of our production. 2 years ago, they bought 1%. So that big China buy this year absorbed a 6% U.S. production increase. Again, this is an unstable trading partner. I've got them a little bit lower next year. We'll see where it goes. I think the prices are going to stay very high in China. If we'll talk politics in a minute, but if we could get the retaliation tariffs lifted, I think we could do some more business there. So here's the most recent data we have. China just released October import data a couple weeks ago. You can see there, if you look at the last point on the chart, imports of pork on the left-hand chart, imports from Spain hit a new record high. Spain shipped over 90,000 tons of pork to China in October. This market is not dead. It's alive and well. The problem is, look at everyone else. Everyone else is in decline. Now, Germany is going to be banned. Their shipments are going to go to zero in November because of African swine fever. The U.S. has the retaliation tariffs. But make no mistake, China needs and wants pork. And if they can get it cheap and make money, they continue to buy. The chart on the right side is the dollar per pound. This is a CIF price, the landed price into China. And you can see the big run-up in price there in Jan, Feb, March of last year. But look at just September, October. Most countries saw a little uptick in price here into October. And I think November will see that as well. Chinese hog prices are on the move again. They're going higher. And so I think as we look here over year end, the next month, 2 months, there's reason to believe China is buying a lot of imported pork from everyone they can get it from. All right, let's shift gears. What about ASF in Germany? Germany is screwed. And I know that's harsh. They are out of the global markets for now. Once you have African swine fever, even in a wild boar, there is no mercy on this planet. There is none. They're out. And so here's Germany's situation. They're counting now. They're up over 190 wild boars they found. It's on the eastern border of Germany, right along by Poland. Obviously, the virus jumped the river from Poland. If you look at the chart on the right-hand side, here's the big fear. That's wild boar density. And you can see that area of Germany highlighted. Now, they've been fighting African swine fever all over the Baltics, the Ukraine, Russia, Romania, all of Eastern Europe has been totally unsuccessful at eradicating ASF. Now look at the boar density as we look into Western Europe. It will be much, much more difficult to control this in Western Europe than it was in Eastern Europe. And Eastern Europe got nowhere with it. And so there's some real problems here. The real question is, one, Germany's out of the markets. They cannot export outside of Europe. Now they can export within Europe. And so that would explain Spain's bigger shipments to China because they're exporting more to China and buying more from Germany because they can still export within the EU. However, they can't export a lot of heads and feet and tails and some of those things that only China was buying. Note that they now have four different clusters of ASF in Germany. I don't think this ends anytime soon. They're trying to build fences, double fences around those four areas and stamp it out. High risk. The second concern on this is, does this begin westward expansion across Europe? And if the Germans can't stop it, look out, because then you've got France, you've got Denmark, ultimately Spain, serious, serious problems. Here's the impact on the markets. Germany supplied 14% of China's pork imports. That's the big market. They were 21% of South Korea. And so you would think, well, we're going to send a lot more pork to South Korea. The problem is Korea was buying mainly bellies from Germany. We don't send many bellies anywhere in the U.S. We love bacon way too much. And so the belly market has gotten tight and the prices have went up in South Korea. But the real impact globally is China. So what if this virus continues migrating across Europe? You can see there, Germany, 42% of their pork exports went outside of the EU. Spain, Netherlands, Belgium, they're all 50% plus. 50%-ish of their exports leave the EU. Every one of those four countries would be devastated by ASF. We've already seen those German prices falling. The real problem in Germany isn't just ASF, it's also COVID. Their plants are slowing down. They claim they've got 100 to 200,000 hogs now backed up. They can't get killed. The prices are plummeting. They have no exports. It's really quite a nightmare for Germany currently. So out of the top 12 global pork exporters, Germany now has ASF and Poland. But you can see there how this thing could get much more interesting were it to hit North America or anywhere else in Western Europe, Brazil, elsewhere. ASF is alive and well. Like I said, it's a very hardy virus. We can't sleep too easy at night and say it's never going to get here. The problem is there's no vaccine. It moves with people and products. And if you run a model long-term under those scenarios, it ends up everywhere. No vaccine, moves with people and products. Give it time, it's everywhere. And I hope that's not the case. If that's the case, I hope North America is the last ones to get it. All right, let's shift gears a minute. Talk about politics. How will a Biden administration affect pork? That's a question I get, and I don't know. I'm definitely not qualified to answer it, but I'll just give you my thoughts. Some of the key changes that we can expect. Biden will keep pressure on China. He has been very tough on China. He came out, his quote, he actually called President Xi a thug. which is kind of tough to come back from. And as tough as Trump was on China, Trump was brutal on his comments against China, but he was always very warm towards President Xi. He would often say, President Xi and I are close, we're friends, we've never been closer. But make no mistake, it isn't just a Trump thing. The U.S. Congress will not allow Biden to let up on China. There will be continued pressure on China. However, Biden has said he wants to focus more on building a coalition with other nations. That slows everything down. And so that would be, you can say positive, negative, whatever. This China relationship, things are going to slow way down from what we've seen in the past. No more trade policy by Twitter. I don't see Biden doing that. Here's one concern for all of us here in the U.S. on both sides of that border to think about: the return of MCOOL, mandatory country of origin labeling. It was pitched by kind of a fringe group in the U.S. years ago and said all this Canadian beef and pork is coming into the U.S. Our consumers should pay more for U.S. pork, and so they ramrodded this mandatory system in place where the product had to be labeled according to the country of origin. It was a complete failure. After years of doing it, it proved that there was no price difference whatsoever. Consumers do not care. U.S. consumers could care less where their food comes from. I mean, 85% of our avocados come from Mexico. Mexico actively promotes Mexican avocados. It's a failed policy, but the Democrat Party has the ear of these fringe groups that really pushed it. And some of those fringe groups that really keep beating the drum on MCOOL are pretty close tied now and aligned with the Democrat administration. So that could come back. We could see MCOOL return in spite of its complete futility and failure. China's pork demand and imports will continue. That doesn't change. The problem is we are carrying in the U.S. 25% retaliation tariffs left over from Trump's trade war. Does Biden get those lifted? That would be a huge boon. And it would be a huge boon if he could get them lifted today or yesterday or last week. But that's not going to happen with Trump in office. And so that could change. Things could change there as we go forward, affecting that trade. Here's a wild card. There could be a UK deal to allow pork. And I think Canada actually may be in a better driver's seat on this than the US. The Trump administration was ready to go. Robert Lighthizer was already sharpening his sword to go after the UK on agriculture. He had said, we will require agriculture access for any deal with the UK. A hard Brexit would force the UK to consider other suppliers under enormous pressure. With the change of the administration, there will be a new U.S. trade representative. There will be new staffing. I don't think we're ready to move as quick on this as we would have been under a Trump administration. But I know the Canadian industry is working on this as well. The U.K. would be a fantastic market. If we got true, fair access, Canada or the U.S., it would be a fantastic pork market. That could happen. What about phase one, the U.S. phase one deal? Everyone focuses on the purchase commitment, which is $36.5 billion. We're not going to reach it. There's no way we're going to reach that this year. Even with China's big buys of corn, we're just not going to be there. But that phase one agreement provided other things as well. It opened all U.S. beef into China. It opened all U.S. poultry into China. Now, there's another purchase commitment for 2021. We'll see what happens with the change of the administration, if that changes as well, or if they keep that purchase commitment. One key risk, here's something I want to talk about, and I think you guys are well aware of this, more so than our U.S. industry, is China's obsession that they are receiving COVID from frozen food imports. They are just absolutely committed to this idea. The only other country in the world that believes it is Vietnam. They came out last week and said, okay, maybe we should test as well. The Japanese, as you know, are the most particular, manic, germophobic importers on earth, and they don't have any problem with this. They've read the science. It's not an issue. But that doesn't matter because China believes it's an issue. These plant delistings are way more political than scientific. The highest number of delistings by China have been Australia and Canada. My estimates are somewhere around 65% of the Canadian pork industry is now banned from exporting pork to China because of these plant delistings. No U.S. pork plants have been delisted. And I say delisted, the Canadian the Chinese government is not delisting, they're forcing you to self-delist, is what's going on. But they're now slowing the flow of product through ports. We've halted shipments to two Chinese ports because they cannot conduct all the testing required to allow meat and poultry into the country. So we're going to start reliving what we saw a year ago with the port slowdowns. A year ago, it was sick workers from COVID. Today, it's testing of COVID in those same ports. We're actually slowing the throughput into China. That's a real risk going forward here, especially in the next 60 days. All right, COVID and pork. I'm going to just fly through these charts quick, just to give you a feel. These are new cases of COVID, cases per 100,000. You can see the U.S., EU, Brazil, Canada, and India. That's number of cases. Now, you got to remember, we're testing now 1.5 million a day in the U.S. So the more testing you do, the more cases you find. If we flip over and look at deaths, the U.S. deaths per 100,000 is well below where it was in spring. But still, we've had a huge increase. Canada's on the rise, Brazil steady, EU has went through the roof. Most of these, as I look at states and countries, most of these have peaked and appear that they're going to start turning lower, especially when you look back here at cases. I think we've just went through a major peak. Let's look at the U.S. And I list here the main U.S. packing states. Why? Because this is the problem, right? We got to have workers cutting up hogs and cattle and chickens. You can see there a huge spike in the last 30 days in Minnesota, Nebraska, Colorado, Kansas, Iowa, those key packing states. But look what's happened. The cases have turned sharply lower. I think the wave has crested, and I think those cases are turning lower. If we look at deaths, the deaths have just started to turn lower. I think those cases will be predictory of what happens. We're going to see some prediction of those cases. The deaths are going to come down as well. Hopefully, we can keep plants running. What about COVID-19 and protein? There were three key impacts. One, we forced all the consumers from restaurants into retail stores. We all saw what happened, right? It drove prices through the roof. Some prices fell, some went up. Steak cuts, bacon, butter, cheese all fell. Consumers buy differently at the grocery store than they do in restaurants. Pork trim and loins went through the roof initially on this. People know how to cook pork loins better than restaurants know how to cook pork loins, apparently. The second factor, sick employees in the plant. We all know what happened. We saw 45% of our packing capacity close down in April and May. That was a disaster. We had a run on product in the stores. We had shortages. That's pretty much recovered and we're moving forward. The question now is, what about longer term demand? Recession, unemployment, fear, how does that affect us? What's most shocking to me as we look at this, let's look at the cutout on the left side. There's where the plant shut down. We run the cutout through the roof, but look at what we saw in September, October. We had a pretty good little pop there in price. COVID has not hurt us. Outside of the April, May situation, consumers are spending. I think U.S. pork demand will show an increase in Q3, Q4. We've got good demand. And the thing is, when you're at a restaurant buying steak or a pork chop, the price differential isn't that severe. But you go to the grocery store and you go, wait a minute, in the U.S. at least, a good ribeye or tenderloin is $14 a pound and pork loins are $2.50 or $3 a pound. The price is much more obvious in the retail case, the price proposition and the benefit of pork. And so I think that's been good for us overall domestically. There's the pork production when those plants fell. Look at where we are right now. So we've been running production at or above year ago levels. And then back to the chart on the left, the price was pretty darn sharp. And so what I'm saying here, I don't think demand has been hurt for pork by COVID. I think we're in a good spot. Now, we don't know what supplies ultimately are going to be, but production was running above a year ago. Here's what consumers have done, at least in the U.S. Retail and food service spending. So retail's grocery stores, food services, restaurants. Those two lines are not going to converge anytime soon. consumers are saving about $2.5 billion a month by buying their food in grocery stores versus restaurants. And that's the lesson we all learned in college, right? If you want your money to go further, shop at the grocery store, don't eat out. And so in a way, Americans have got a bit of a boost by buying more of their food at retail. Now, this is a chart just to show the economy. This says retail and food service. This is all goods. This is handbags. This is TVs, computers, tires, everything. In the 2008 recession, it took 2.5 years to get consumer spending back. Look at where we are today. Consumer spending's up 6% from a year ago in October. Americans are spending money like crazy. Now, this is what happens when you throw $2 trillion out on the economy. The U.S. stimulus was a massive boost. It was like rocket fuel to our economy. Now it's starting to wear out, but Congress is now talking about a new one. They proposed this week, the House and Senate both agreed to a $900 billion stimulus, about half the size of the previous one. So look out. The IMF, here's what they're showing for global GDP. You can see the process here. In January, they had global GDP up 3%. By April, they had trimmed it minus 3, June minus 5. The October forecast is minus 4. But look at 2021. The IMF shows a pretty quick response, 5% growth on the global economy. They're looking like things are going to step up quick. And what's driving that? All the news right now, COVID-19 vaccine. There's three likely options. They're going to begin distribution this month in the U.S. The U.K. began this week. How fast can this occur? Well, for the highest risk, it can occur fairly quick. Consider this, the U.S. deaths from COVID thus far, about 271,000 deaths. 2.1 million Americans are in long-term care facilities. They represent 39% of the deaths. The CDC came out and said 94% of U.S. deaths came from people that had three or more comorbidities. That equates to 255,000 of the 271,000 deaths came to people that had three other possible reasons they could die. So if you exclude those with three plus comorbidities, the death toll was only 16,000. The total influenza deaths this last year were over 21,000 in the U.S. So if you exclude those that had three or more underlying conditions, COVID was less than influenza this year in the U.S. Pretty shocking. Here's the plans for vaccination. You've got high risk people with high risk conditions, 100 million people. You've got essential workers, healthcare personnel, and adults over 65. You can go and pull this download. This was just the CDC just put this out, talking about how they will roll out vaccination. Phase one, healthcare personnel, that's 21 million people. Long-term care facility residents, 2 million people. So that's roughly 22 million people. That'll take 7 weeks. The next phase, non-healthcare essential workers, that's policemen, firemen, those kind of things, 87 million. Phase 1C would take another 12 weeks. That's adults over 65, anyone with higher risk. So here's what that looks like. And the long story short with all of this, by May, it is a very high likelihood that we will have all high-risk people in the United States vaccinated for COVID. Now we have three potential vaccines, maybe four. So as you roll those out, that spreads very quickly. So what I'm saying here is there is reason for optimism over COVID. We are in a spot where we can get vaccine moving quickly. It's already right at the beginning phase. And I think by May, April, May, June, COVID starts becoming a thing of the past. One final thought, the shifting global feed grains markets. And this is something we just started talking about here 2 months ago. The biggest impact of African swine fever worldwide maybe was not the loss of half of China's hogs. The biggest impact was the ban on feeding human food waste in China. The Chinese officials banned it. It was reinfecting ASF from food scraps. So the farmers also shunned it, because they saw their hogs getting infected. This took 30 million tons of feed out of the global feed complex that now has to be replaced by compound feeds, corn and soy meal. 30 million tons of human food waste was being fed in China. It's not anymore. Chinese hog prices or corn prices, corn and soybeans are up 30% from a year ago. They're now scouring the global markets for corn, sorghum, feedweed, barley, and they're not even close to expanded yet. And they have profits that will allow them to pay way more for feed than we can. And they're going to continue to expand. And so that's the demand side of the global feed grains balance sheet. What about supply? Brazil's midsummer drought has gone from bad to worse. So where's the feed going? There's Chinese hogs. These are the USDA numbers. USDA said their annual slaughter's down 200 million head this year, but yet they use the same amount of corn and a little more soy meal. So what does that tell us as they bump back up to that 200 million head? They're going to need a lot more corn and a lot more soy meal. Here's just a final slide. Here's the precip and temperature forecast for Brazil for December, January. Now, if you know where Brazil's crops are, it's in that bottom half of the country. Look at the drought there. Severe precipitation drought, higher temperatures through December and also through January. This would be like us, July and August, or June, July. December would be like June, January would be July. This would be like the U.S. Corn Belt in June, July. Brazil's drought is severe, and it's getting worse. There's a massive La Nina building in the Pacific. It could lead to drought in North America this summer. Keep an eye on feed grains. We could see these corn prices. I know they've went up. They may not be done yet. With that, I'm going to just go through my watch list and wind it up. We've talked about China prices, plant bans, economy, politics. These are the things I'm watching every week. Export orders into 2021. Not much has been booked yet. Politics, a new U.S. trade agenda, another U.S. stimulus. I mean, what politician is going to vote against stimulus? That has a big impact on the protein prices. Our economies, what about unemployment, consumer spending? As these vaccines roll out, we could see a bit of a sugar high come back into the economy. But make no mistake, the world remains short of pork due to China's ASF. They have massive inflation in China. But do they care? Not really. And ASF is on the move in Germany. Global feed grains markets are at risk. With that, Brad, I'll wind it up and open it up for any questions.
Thank you very much, Brad. That was a great presentation, like you always do. You covered a lot of different areas here over the last 45 minutes, and we are open for questions. I guess the first question that I do have, you did talk a lot about China, but you know, really African swine fever is hitting other major countries in the world. And basically a lot of other countries are being forced to import pork also. Have you done any calculations on, you know, the total pork reduction or pork that's, you know, we're not seeing in the last year or two because of African swine fever in Europe and Asia? Like, so not just China, but in some of the other countries.
Yeah. Yeah, so really the problem is China is half of the world's swine herd. So when they lose 65%, any other country's calculations are a margin of error. However, we know that Vietnam lost hogs at similar rates with China. Vietnam has begun importing poultry pretty aggressively, and they're now just starting to import more pork. We're going to see more pork go into Vietnam, potentially more from Canada, who is in the TPP agreement. The U.S. is not in the TPP agreement. So Canada may have a little bit of an advantage here shipping pork into Vietnam. The Philippines are going to be short. They're a little bit lagged behind Vietnam in their outbreaks. They may still be in some of that liquidation phase that causes a supply increase. But make no mistake, the demand for pork is very strong and will be through 2021 throughout mainly Asia. Now, in Germany, their domestic production has not been affected. They haven't had a domestic farm break. It's just the problem of finding those wild boars. And they are in a heavy supply situation right now. Their freezers are full. They have backlogs of hogs. And China can sit back and whittle prices on Spain and these others. No good solution. I think we see weak pricing out of Europe for the next three to 6 months.
Okay. One other question, you talked about the 25% tariffs on U.S. pork going to China. Any idea that's going to continue, and how much is it actually affecting U.S. price? Is it by 25% or is it less?
Good question.
So, full amount, or they, you know, because they're getting such a high price from China, are they discounting that or not for prices back in North America?
Yeah, what the U.S. exporters are saying when the Chinese call, they say, okay, here's what we're bidding for EU pork. So we got to pay a 25% tariff on your pork, so we're going to bid significantly less for yours. So we are being discounted every week on pork that we sell to China because of that tariff. It is highly punitive for us. If it were to be lifted next week, it would be a big deal. We would feel it in the markets because all of a sudden we're right back in. Now, tariffs are managed in a weird way by China. The government gives different companies different tariff rates. They never report it. The state-owned enterprises probably are not paying 25%. The market's not just truly an open market, but those are punitive. And I guess to your point, what are the odds of that being lifted? You know, Biden hasn't said a lot about what he would do, but he was pretty critical of the tariffs. I would think that maybe he would move to do that. The tariff that put that one on were the Section 232 tariffs against steel and aluminum imports into the U.S. That was the first round of tariffs Trump lobbed over at China, was the 232 tariffs. And so if we were to lift tariffs on steel and aluminum shipments from China, that would be the point of beginning to get these tariffs lifted on pork. I don't know if they could get lifted some other way. Maybe there would be some goodwill gesture here as Biden takes office that they could get that done. I don't know.
But it's probably positive that Biden's taken over versus Trump remaining for that to happen.
Yeah, for those 25% tariffs, yeah, they weren't. I don't think Trump had any intention of lifting the steel tariffs anytime soon.
We got it. There was a, from around here, very interesting presentation. One small comment. It can be assumed that many people dying from flu also had several comorbidities. So it's not fair to compare the number of deaths from COVID of people with comorbidities up to all deaths from flu. Okay, I guess that's interesting.
Yeah, any of that data is complicated. And then the answer to every question is complicated. I've never seen an issue more complicated than COVID. You know, I don't think we'll ever really, truly understand the impact.
And I think the scary part with COVID, though, is not everybody knows how they'll be affected.
Right.
You may think you're healthy, but until you get it, you don't know.
Yeah, so like I said, I've had symptoms this week, and I was like, wow, that's all it was? It really was nothing. But I've also been to two funerals for people that have had COVID and died from it. And so it's just complicated.
So we're open for some more questions, if anybody has. So have you done some analysis on how much pork from North America you think will go to China over the next 6 to 12 months?
I've got some monthly forecasts. I'm just in the process of updating my monthly forecast. Here's the big telling sign. So Chinese New Year is the peak demand for all imports into China, beef, pork, and poultry. And generally what happens with Chinese hog prices is the Jan-Feb highs, the highest price in Jan-Feb typically falls 25% into March, April, May. So there's a big seasonal break in hog prices. That's under normal circumstances. Now, the last 2 years, that didn't happen because they were so short on pork. The next signal to us on what's going to happen with China pork going forward is what happens to these prices post Chinese New Year. And Chinese New Year is February 12th. So if we look at March, April, May hog prices, if they do that seasonal 25% break, then we can start to assume things are getting more normal back there. If those prices stay high, that tells me we got 12 more months of a lot of pork to China. And I would be shocked to see those prices break significantly because I think they are still very short on pork.
Do you have a question here from Joseph? If election fraud is proven and Trump does remain in office, what will the impact be on China trade?
That's way over my pay grade. I don't know, but we will know very, very soon because I think it's December 13th that the election is certified in the U.S. I think Trump, for all of his frustration and all of his whatever tweets about election injustice, I think he's going to come up some short. I don't see this happening. I think it's about 99.999% certain that Trump will not have a second term. But I don't know. It would have to be pulling a big rabbit out of the hat for that to happen. But if that were to happen, it would turn the world upside down, I think, for a while here. I don't think it's going to happen.
So what would your three key messages be today for what producers should watch for? And I think you kind of suggested that, you know, watch for feed shortages and particularly rising feed prices. Maybe what are the two things should producers really keep their eye out for?
Yeah, as a hog producer in North America,
the next
particularly
few months it could affect the hog markets in North America.
Yeah, particularly as a Canadian hog producer, I would be watching that China price every week. China will determine your fortunes here over the next 6 months and really in the coming years. If you can get some plants relisted, that'd be fantastic. On average, it's taken about 45 days to get plants relisted once China closes them. So getting those Canadian plants going again, the China hog price, the feed grains, we talked about that. And overall, what happens with this vaccine rollout? I think we could have a little bit of a boost to overall demand as the economy starts to crank back up here. I think things look good. I think North American demand, I think, is good for pork. But again, yeah, feed grains could get a little dicey, and keep an eye on China.
Well, with that, Brett, thank you very much for your presentation. Again, very informative as usual. You have some of these great global stats that are, you know, hard to find and take a lot of time. So thank you so much for your presentation today. And we hope you feel better and things do pick up in North America and COVID is better controlled. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brad. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your group today. It was good to be with you. Have a great
week.
Thank
you very much. So with that, thank you everybody for your attendance at these meetings. Everyone who's turned out over the last 5 weeks. Thank you to our excellent panel of speakers today and over the last 5 weeks. I think it's been a very informative couple sessions. I know today was especially interesting for me. As an economist, I do like my numbers. And so it's very, very informative, very useful to find out what's going on the globe, especially with transportation for people not traveling as much these days. It's hard to get around and to really find out what's going on. Again, thank you for everyone for attending. We've had nearly 350 registrations for the sessions. Again, we're grateful for the support of our producers and stakeholders. SAS Pork looks forward to next year's event. And hopefully in 2021, we can once again come together for a live conference. So thank you very much. And a special thank you to SAS Pork and particularly to Kim Brown for all her work she's done in preparing a symposium year after year after year. We understand that she will be retiring this coming summer, so likely not able to attend next year. But again, thank you very much to SAS Pork and Kim Brown for all their work putting this together. Thank you very much, and hope you guys all have a safe week, a safe month, a Merry Christmas, and everybody stay safe. Thank you very much.